Hi, guys. Well, welcome back to another episode. Last week, we were on with Kevin Terry, and man, if you guys haven't checked out that podcast, you need to go look it up and watch it, because we actually went over a little bit longer than our normal podcast, but it worked out really good.
Yeah, we did.
It was great. It was phenomenal. Honestly, we could probably sit here and talk for another hour with Kevin, mm-hmm. because he had some really inspirational ideas. It was very motivating to hear and talk from him.
And I got to say, especially having video and stuff, man, everybody shared that like crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like it went very good.
It's already got a lot of views on YouTube and things. And so I'm looking forward to this one. I think this one's going to be a fan favorite.
I think it's going to be great. And which part of the reasons why this is going to be so great is because last week, you know, we talked a little bit about some of our church diversity that we have seen, especially in small town USA, like places like Scott County. And how can we help be the solution instead of the problem? How could we mm-hmm. come together and unite churches through Scott County? Yeah. And I think that leads us perfectly into the guy we have sitting here today. I mean, I know that you guys all know Randy Burge, and he is chilling with us today. Wanted to come make some conversation with us, and it's a perfect day to have him right after our podcast with Kevin, because if anybody wants to talk about connecting churches, Randy is a great person to do it, man. This guy has been to probably every church in the county and told his story and talked a little bit. And we kind of just wanted to tell him to tell a little bit of his story today. And so, Randy, I'm going to hand it off to you. You can introduce yourself.
Sure. Like I said, Randall Burge. Right now, today, I work with the STAND program. I worked 4 years with Recovery Corp. And I'm a person in long-term recovery. What that means is any mistake you can think of, I've made it. I always like starting off my story because when I was growing up, everybody told me, you know, to be an addict, you have to come from a bad background, you know? Mm-hmm. You always know those kids in school where you'd look at the table and you would see them and you would think their family's probably trash. So they're probably going to end up being trash. And that's what I thought. I knew drug addicts were trash. I knew they'd never amount to nothing. I knew they'd never be nothing. Mm. And I knew it couldn't happen to me.
Mm.
I grew up in church. I sung in a youth choir. Right?
There you go.
I knew the right way. I knew everything right to do. My family took me to church. There was no option. Ooh. You had to go. Good pastor, good church. So there was no way that I could become an addict. That's the way I was taught. But what I found out is that's a lie. It can very well happen to anybody, no matter how much money you got, no matter how you're raised, no matter what kind of upbringing you've got. It can happen. And that's what happened to me. I played football. And looking at me now, you wouldn't know, but when I played, I was one of the smallest linemen on the team, right? So I started as a freshman, and in Scott County, if you play football, if you start, it kind of makes you somebody, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's weird, it's a big deal.
Somebody.
Sounds, right? But it did, and I started as a freshman, so early off, I remember, you know, that's all I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You know, my family, like, my family's the family that always showed up at the ball games.
Oh, mm-hmm. yeah.
Away, home, cold, raining, my family so was there.
They were there, but were they the kind of family that you knew they were there?
My mom, you could hear her screaming from the football field. I mean, she'd get on, I would have to tell her to sit down. You know, she got on my nerves. I was so embarrassed by my family growing
right?
Because shame on them, all my family ever wanted to do was love on me. Yeah. Shame on them, right? Yeah. I was embarrassed by that. I thought my dad was weak because he cried a lot. I thought my mom was just hateful, to be honest with you, because she never co-signed my crap, you know? So yeah. She would always just be in my face.
Yeah,
with everything.
Yeah.
And my dad's more the behind-the-scene type of guy. Mm-hmm. My dad would want to come up and love on me. But I'm also the type of person, if I'm upset, the worst thing you can do is come up and pet on me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it drives me crazy. But I was playing football. We didn't win a lot of football. I remember 09, I was going to championships. I don't have those stories. It wasn't like, you know, we thought I was going to go pro or nothing. But I felt like I made my family proud.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, like, they were proud to say, that's my son, you know, and that's all I wanted. I growed up with my mom and dad. They sit next to each other still today in a vehicle. I mean, they'll make you sick just loving on each other and all the time waiting on each other hand and foot, you know, seeing what they want to eat, you know, just leave it to Beaver type family. That's what I call it.
Okay, right? There you go.
So when I was playing football, it was my senior year, so I mean, we were used to losing, but we lost a ball game a Friday night. And that was normal, you know. Mm. And I'll never, there's certain days in your life that you will always remember.
Right.
And I never can speak of that day without it messing with my head, you know. Yeah. It was, everything seemed to be going pretty good for me. I planned on going to college, done had some, you know, signed up for Rome State, and I wasn't going to go play college ball or nothing anywhere, but, you know, I was going to get a degree in something, you know, and, work, and you know that's what I was raised to do. Mm-hmm. So I come out of a football game. I had the same girlfriend all through high school. The typical thing, you know, the jock football player and the cheerleader, you know. Yep. the perfect romance, right? It was actually my first girlfriend I'd ever had, and you know, we'd stuck together the whole time. And I come out after a football game and I walked right up on a vehicle with her cheating on me.
Oh man.
And you know, something messed with my head. Nobody explained to me what I knew. This I knew all I wanted out of life. I don't remember like wanting big cars, and we wasn't raised that way. We played in the creek looking for crawdads. That's, you know,
right.
We were just country, you know, didn't want big stuff. My family, you know, lived at the top of Brimstone, and family was the important thing for us. And so all I wanted out of that relationship was what I thought normal relationship was. I thought what everybody had was what my mom and dad had.
Right.
I know today that's not the case. I know I'm a minority in that situation. But I thought that was normal, and that's all I wanted out of life was that relationship. And that day I felt like that was took from me.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was doing right? Everybody else would go out to parties, and I didn't care about partying. Everybody else would go out and do all this other stuff, and I didn't care about that. I honestly played football. I worked out, and I hung out with my girlfriend, and her dad was a pastor. And I remember just thinking, like, how could a pastor's daughter do that? There can't be nothing to this God.
Right.
That's what I thought. Kids. That's what I thought, yeah. Right? Just like a lot of people today will blame God for a lot of things people do.
Oh, yeah. Anytime something bad happens, I mean, sure. Who's the first person they blame is God.
It. Well, that's what I did. So I thought God was fake, and I started living my life that way.
Hmm.
I quit wanting to go to church. I started being embarrassed about being in the youth choir. You know, the kid that starts hiding in the back row from everybody? Mm-hmm. That's what started happening to me. And I guess if I would have spoke up, maybe the church would have loved on me a little more or something. I don't know. But I felt myself distancing myself from the good people. I grew up with, I was working with the volunteer fire department. I wasn't just some random kid that didn't do nothing. I was helping the community. We would go out on fire calls. We was on the search and rescue team, and they would let me leave school to go to these fires. Like I was a good kid.
Yeah. Yeah. We still have several of those at Scott High even now.
Sure.
You know, where I teach, and it's kind of funny. You hear the walkie talkies and stuff going off.
Yeah,
during class, and they're like, "Oh, I gotta go.
Time to go." And I guess that was my first rush was the volunteer fire department.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also, what comes with that is when you go in and see certain things, you have to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't deal with it right, it will come back.
Mm-hmm. Kind of numbs you.
Sure. And. So, like, I was a good kid, you know, and I knew addiction couldn't touch me. And but when I found that girl cheating on me, I become real violent, you know, and I wasn't raised violent. My dad has fake whipped me most of my life. Wouldn't even really whip me. I mean, he would tell me, act like this hurts to please my mom, you know. Yeah. So I wasn't raised in a violent family. So then after that, it's like I started, everything just changed. I didn't want to go home and talk to my mom and dad anymore. I didn't want to talk to people about my problems. Mm-hmm. All anybody wanted to do is talk about that situation.
Right.
And I was tired of talking about it. So I started hanging out with people who didn't want to talk about it and people who didn't play football. And come to find out, it was the people that were doing other things. Mm-hmm. They had no extracurricular activities. They wasn't in those scholars bowl. They wasn't going to play in anywhere. They wasn't working on their career. They were just hanging out. But I remember the guy that I probably drank a little bit here and there. I mean, I would go to parties, like starting off, And I wouldn't even drink. And I remember, like, one night we were up at the mountain. We left and we painted arrows on the road on the way to the party, right? Which is dumb. Right. Because I wonder how the cops found out where we were at, right? But we wanted everybody to know, come here, we're here. Yeah. But I remember this night we were at the campfire and everybody was having a good time. And I couldn't figure out why these people like doing that. Mm. You watch them acting a fool and I thought, what's the point of all this, right? I was just learning. And I remember watching my mom and dad walk in front of me through the campfire. Like, I was on one side, and I watched them walk through the party. And they were asking people if they had seen Randy, because Randy always come home. Hmm. Randy always talked to mom and dad. Mom and dad always knew where Randy was at. Yeah. But this is where they started not knowing where Randy was, not knowing what Randy was doing. And I remember my friends loading me up, and they took me out the back door. And I was sitting at the house when mom and dad got there. And they asked me where I'd been. And I guess that's when I know plainly, without a doubt in my mind, that's when I started lying with no problem. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want them to know where I was at. I didn't want them to know who I was hanging out with. And I remember looking at my dad and lying to him. And like I said, my dad's not a violent man. And when you lie to somebody you know only loves you. Mm. It's a lot like lying to God, knowing that he only loves us and he only wants the best. And he already knew. My daddy already knew. But I wanted to lie to him anyway. It made me feel better.
Yeah.
Which is what we do a lot of times. So after that, I started dabbling in other stuff, and you know, people say, "Well, there's nothing wrong with pot," and you know, I tried to make that argument for a long time. Even had my mom buy a bag of pot for me one time, because I could be fighting mad, and I could smoke a little weed, and I would calm down, and I thought I have to have this to function now. But what I hadn't learned is how to deal with my problems like normal people do. I started finding the easy way out. I can say an addict is a coward. Because we take the easy way. We run. And that's what I started doing. And I know this. It wasn't like I smoked a joint and it made me want to do heroin. But it did introduce me to those people.
Right. Okay.
And I think if I never would have smoked a joint, if I never would have been buying pot. I remember being in Kentucky at a place everybody knows. He's probably still in business today. And I was there to buy pot, and that's when they started selling Oxycontins. And he said, "Hey, you want one of these?" And he told me how much they were, and I thought, that's crazy. Who could spend that kind of money, right? And I left out, and I thought, and watching these people just throw thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Down.
And I remember going home, but I was out one night, and one of my friends, he had a nice vehicle. He always had people around him. You know, when I changed from the fire department crew and the good church crew that I was hanging out with to a new crowd, I felt myself alone a lot, and I didn't want to be alone.
Yeah.
And so with this crew, he always had people around him, and he had a nice vehicle. And at this time, he was the first guy my age that was, like, living in his own place. So I thought that was real. I thought this dude's got it figured out.
He got figured out.
Yeah. Because there was always something going on in his house.
Right, yeah.
And that was my best friend all the way through school. So I knew he'd never lie to me. And we were in the vehicle, and even though I didn't want to talk about it, it seemed like the only thing I talked about was that situation. And I started talking about that girl's situation again. And he just said, "Hey, try this. It'll make you feel better." That's all he said. I wish I would have had the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I could have fast-forward 12 years and seen everything that would have happened, because the answer was no way then. But in the mindset that I was in and the situation that I was in and looking and seeing how great it looked, there was no hesitation, really, for I trusted this man. And it's just like going to your doctor and the doctor saying, "Hey, you're hurt. Take this. It'll help you."
Right.
Which is what happens a lot of time. Addiction ends up being the same way, whether it's from a doctor, whether it's from your friend. They say, "Hey, you need this. Mm-hmm. Take this, and it'll make you feel better." And the truth was it did. And that's how addiction gets so strong, is because it did make me feel better. It did make me forget. It brought me out of my seclusion. And made me feel like more of the guy at the party type thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, I could talk to people. I was a smooth talker. Like, everything started changing. Music I was listening to started changing. The way I dressed started changing. The way I talked started changing drastically because of the people I'd been around. And that led me down 12 years of drug addiction. Oxycontin, I think, is the worst pain pill ever invented. And I think crystal meth is the devil himself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that, but they've probably not seen the things that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk to the people that I talk to on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say crystal meth is the devil himself. There's a wickedness comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
But with pain pills, a lot of people can do it and nobody knows. I was spending $600 every day and I would sit right here and you would have no idea.
Wow.
My family had no idea. They never had an addict. They never had to deal with anything like that. So my family thought when I was laying on the couch shivering and shaking that that's what high was.
Mm-hmm.
But we know today that's detox.
Yep.
Yeah.
But what they didn't realize is the days that I was out in the yard playing with my nieces and my nephews, having fun, being the life of the house, that's the days that I was really high.
Mm-hmm.
The days they thought were good days with me.
Right.
Was all because of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And if I did not have that, they did not have good days with Randy.
Mm-hmm.
So it got to a point to where I had to have drugs to function. And if you have lost the jobs that I'd lost a job at Tenere, I'd lost a job at Great Dane, I lost a job at Fastenal. So the secret's out, right? Everybody's telling my family everything that I'm doing. But my mom and dad knew they raised me right. So there's no way it could be their kid. It might be everybody else's kid. My family liked to think it was everybody else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of families still do that today. It's easier for my family to blame you for my kid's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand why that is. But the reason is once they realize that it is their kid and he is the problem, then they have to do something about
that. Right.
It's easy for me to tell you to kick your kid out of the house.
Mm-hmm. It's so easy to look at somebody else's situation because your emotions aren't tied up in it.
But it's hard to kick your own kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my mom and dad did that, saved my life, best thing they could ever have done.
Mm.
But to say I could do that to my daughter, I do not know. Even knowing it's the best thing to do.
Yeah.
Even knowing that that's what saved my life. You have to go through so much junk to get to a point to where you tell your kid, you can't come here no more.
Mm.
And I guess that's really why it bothers me so much is to realize what I put my family through.
Right.
I tell everybody addiction's 10 times harder on the family than it is on the addict. Don't feel sorry for the addict, right? Now, listen, they're in a bad spot, right? But the family's sitting at home with no checkout, wondering if tonight's the night that they get the call.
Mm.
Are they going to be dead? Is there another vehicle trashed? I remember hitting some kids head on and, you know, that could have took everything my family had from me and from them. I remember being up 2 weeks on crystal meth and going home to my mom and my dad and just use it. I was raised with two brothers, three boys and my daddy in the house. So we used the bathroom with the door open. Right. So I'd come in and I was using the bathroom and in the middle of using the bathroom, I collapsed in the bathroom floor. And my brothers found me, and I was, you know, using the bathroom on myself, and they said, "Help Randy, something's wrong with Randy." And my mom and dad, of course, come and got me, and of course, they did what any family would do. You know, your son's just passing out, something's wrong with him. They take me to the hospital, and they start running all these tests on me.
Yeah.
But I was an adult, which all that means is I was over the age of 18. I wasn't making adult decisions. Nope. I wish the doctor could have just looked at my mom and dad and said, "Listen, your kid's high on crystal meth. That's the problem."
Yeah.
But by law, he couldn't do that.
Wow.
I was really? An adult. He could not tell them
that
I had drugs in my system.
Dang.
So my mom and dad have to sit there and them run all these tests, and every test keeps coming back that I'm healthy. There's nothing wrong with me. And my dad keeps saying something's wrong with my baby. And the doctor said, "Well, there's one more test we can run, but it's going to cost $100,000, James." And my dad, without breathing, says, "Run the test."
Mm.
That would have took my family's house.
Yeah.
And my dad and mom never hesitated. They would have done without their house to make sure I was healthy.
Hmm.
And me sitting there, knowing what the problem is, did not say a word.
Wow.
Knowing I was fixing to take not only my house that I lived in, but my whole family's house and everything they would ever own. So I didn't have to tell the truth, because lying had become such a part of my life.
Yeah.
That was easier for me than to tell the truth. But luckily, I'd like to know who this doctor was, because I'd like to thank him. Luckily, that doctor run my mom and dad out of the office. And he sat down with me, and he said, "Son, think about what you're fixing to do. You're going to take everything your family's got, or you can just tell them the truth." And so he brought my mom and my dad in, and he set them down. And now, they had been hearing from everybody else the drugs that Randy had been doing, but they never believed it. But this day was different, because he sat down and he handed me a list on a clipboard, and it had every common drug with check boxes next to it. And I had to sit there in front of my mom and my dad and check off every drug that I had been doing. And it wasn't just pot anymore. It wasn't just pills anymore. It wasn't just meth, acid, X, shrooms, ecstasy. You name it. I had to mark them all off. And my mom, just every time I checked another box, you could just feel the shame. And we left that day, and I don't remember what happened afterwards. I'm sure my mom and dad went back and tried to talk to me, but Randy did what Randy would do. Randy would take off. And any family, when your kid takes off for a couple weeks when you haven't seen him, you don't know what he's doing, you're not going to kick him right back out. When he shows up, you're going to love on him. And that's what they did. And it got to the point that to where my grandma had passed away. She had left me a good chunk of money. My family had all told her, don't leave Randy anything, right? They already had the proof of what Randy was going to do with his life. And they said, don't leave Randy anything. But my mamma would not treat me different, even though when she passed away, she thought the money she left me would be what killed me. And I don't know how it didn't, because my mamma left me $30,000 cash, just like she did everybody else. And in 2.5 months, I'd spent my grandparents' life savings. And every member of my family has something to remember that by. You know, my brother put some money on his house. My other brother bought a vehicle. My mom and dad bought, you know, stuff that my mamma, all my aunts and uncles, everybody has something to remember that money by. And all Randy has is these scars in my arms to thank my mamma by. So my mamma never got to see me clean, never got to see me do right. And that's the stuff that people say, you need to get past that. But that there's certain things you're just going to struggle with. I've learned you just have to just know that today's better. And it took all that. A lot of people don't like when I say that, but it took all that to happen for me to be who I am today, to where I can sit in a room with somebody who's done a lot of dirty stuff, made a lot of bad mistakes, even still making bad mistakes, and can look at them still like a human being. Because they still are. A lot of people want to have big soul-saving revivals, but they don't want any sinners in the church. Listen, I see God change some folks.
Absolutely.
Listen, it ain't just a slight change, right? I mean, I watched God put some people on fire. Because the Bible says who much is given, much is required. And when you feel like you've held hands with the devil for a long time, when you get to witness who God really is, well, you're more thankful than somebody who's never experienced that. So every day I can lay my head down on my pillow and realize I'm not ashamed of my family. And then I get to come do stuff like this, and people, your parents didn't say, you can't talk to Randy Burge. He's no good. He'll never amount to nothing. My own aunts and uncles had to tell their kids that. And people say, how could they do that? And I said, they had to do that. When I left and went to treatment, my dad had got to a point. He would always take, he's country, and he just took $5 a day for his lunch. You can't even, I can't eat on $5. I don't know what he was doing, but he would take $5 every day for his lunch. And my mom would go to work and he would go to work. And my dad would always sneak back and give me his $5 so I could buy cigarettes or whatever Randy wanted to buy. But he wanted to make sure I was still comfortable. At this point in time, I was just allowed to sleep in their driveway. Started stealing some stuff from the house, and they told me, hey, if you steal one more thing, you can't come back in here. And what I thought would never happen did. They stuck to their word. And so I stole one more thing, and they said, you have to leave when we leave. We can't even trust you in our house anymore. And I remember sitting in that vehicle, and I would sit there all 8 hours of the day waiting until they come home from work. And I would just look at that real nice house, and I'm sleeping in this junky vehicle, you know, cold, couldn't even afford to turn the heat on, and realizing what my life really was and hating myself. But that did not stop me as soon as I got another dollar to take off. And people don't understand that, but there was no stop in me. I didn't want to live.
Yeah.
So every time I used, I felt like that got me closer to that.
Mm.
So I remember one day my dad come home and he gave me the $5. And they were not a rich family, right? So that night they got on Facebook and noticed I was in Myrtle Beach. And my dad called me, and of course I was over there shooting heroin with some of my friends. I took $5 and bought two boxes of Sudafed and had a guy cook some dope, and we sold some dope and got some gas money, and next thing you know, we're at Myrtle Beach.
Man.
And my dad said, I can't even trust you with $5. I mean, how low is it where your dad realizes he can't trust you with anything, not just a little bit of something, but absolutely anything he can never trust you with again. And so that's when my family completely cut me off, and they said, enough's enough. Which is something that has to happen.
Right, right.
A lot of people don't like that part. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily my favorite part either.
Right.
Right? I don't know that I could do that part, but I've not had to do that part yet. I get the good part. And the good part in my story was Miss Teresa Brayton. And I always speak of Teresa, and I tell everybody, and I want everybody to know till the end of my days, even if Miss Teresa called right now and said, Randy, I need you. Sorry, fellas, I'm gone. Because this lady, for no reason that I can think of, stuck it out for me. She would talk to churches and say, pray for Randy, call Randy. And people wouldn't even call me on the phone. And for the life of me, I don't know what I could have done over the phone, but I needed that person, you know, that would have reached out to me and let me know that I was welcome back there, because in my mind, everybody that belonged to any church in Scott County at this point hated me.
Yeah.
And if I walked in, the roof would catch on fire. We've all heard that, but I really believe that, that nobody ever wanted me in there because I'd made too many mistakes. And my dad always likes to say, Randy, we all make mistakes, but yours just gets put in the paper. And Randy was making the paper pretty regular.
Yeah.
So that judgment, that it, whether it was real or not, is really irrelevant to me because in my mind, it was truer than my name. I felt that. So Miss Teresa would keep asking people, and people tell her all the time now, they say, I wish God would give me a burden like he did you for Randy. And Miss Teresa will tell you, no, you don't.
Yeah.
It was not easy. I wasn't a good person. So if I felt like you loved me, I would use you until I used you up. But Miss Teresa would just tell me no. It wasn't like she just always gave me my way and loved on me. But Miss Teresa had a way of talking to me that most people wouldn't. And Miss Teresa just kept on answering my phone call and kept on trying to talk to me and kept on saying, Randy, if you would just give your life to God, he could use you. He loves you. And I thought, man, this is fake, but I'll use that. I'll run with it. I've been saved. I was saved, at, you know, the whole, like, knowing I was never saved. I had made a profession of faith, but it was, I knew at the time I did it, it was nothing.
But I
got used to telling people I was saved, so they would leave me alone.
Right.
So.
It's easy around here to know the right things to say.
Yeah. Just, it's over with. I know if I say yes, then people are going to move on.
Yeah.
Right? We don't need to worry about you anymore. Right? So that's how I got by so long. But I remember one day I was calling. I was trying to bum money at this point in my addiction. I was spending $600 a day. I was doing 10 Percocet 30s and 10 Dilaudid K8s every day. That's $600 every day just to function. Nowadays, that's probably $1,000 is what they're charging. It's crazy that's out wild, there now. And you think, how could you come up with that much money? Well, I've already told you, stealing, running through my family's life savings, and bumming from people. You did not want to run into me, right? And but Miss Teresa just kept answering the phone for me. And I called her one day, and I was trying to bum money from her. And I said, my truck engine had blowed up. Listen, I couldn't just say I needed 20 bucks.
Right.
If you would have gave me 20 bucks, I'd probably been upset with you.
Because
that's not enough to feed what I've got going on. And she didn't give me the money. I said, my truck engine's blowed up. And she said, Randy, that's what you told me yesterday. You see, that line just come off my tongue so easy.
Man, yeah.
And when you're lying, you got to remember who you told what lie to. That's why I think it's beautiful today just to tell the truth. I know there's a lot of people like, man, I can't believe that guy tells all that stuff he's done. But it's easier for me.
Yeah.
Because once I start down that path of lying, I know what Randy does. Randy goes all the way, and then nothing makes sense to me
anymore.
Once
you put something in the light, it loses its hold on you.
Sure. Sure. So then Miss Teresa said, Randy, you need help. That's why a lot of people today tell me they want to help somebody. They just don't know how to help. They don't know what to do. But listen, how simple is you need help? We can all say that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can say that and mean that.
Yeah.
It's not hard, right? She didn't have to go. I thought people had to go through what I'd been through before they could help me. And a guy told me that one day. He said, how much drugs has Miss Teresa done? I said, well, none at all. He said, it sounded like she was a help to you. So that's where today a lot of people in recovery think, you can't help me. You haven't been where I've been. But this lady is that's the pinnacle of my recovery right there. The start of my path was a lady that a church lady who just prayed for this boy, but not just prayed for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of days we say, we'll pray for you.
Yeah. She put faith into action.
She started working. And even when it was hard. Even when I'm sure she's seen my number and she thought, not again. God, fix him now, you know. For years, praying and praying and praying. Until finally one day, that prayer come through. And I told Miss Teresa I did need help. But I said, I have to get out of here. Yeah. I know people that I work with now. I'm working with a guy right now that just said, hey, I'm done. I quit. I couldn't do that. I had one guy that was dropping 50 Percocet 30s in my mom and dad's mailbox, so I didn't even need the money at this point. Once you've blown through $80,000, they know you're going to come up with the money, no matter what you had to do. So I had to leave, and Miss Teresa made a phone call to the STAND program, which is oddly enough where I work at now, and they contacted Drug Court, which is oddly enough where I did work at, and they made a contact to Corpus Christi, Texas.
Wow.
And there was a place that a man by the name of Egbert Hembry had went to, and Egbert had come back and was doing really good, and Egbert snuck around to my mom and dad's house and said, listen, this is a good place. They're going to feed him well, and when he calls and tells you it's a cult and they're starving him to death, don't you bring him home. He's going to be lying. He's going to be detoxed, and he'll do anything to get out of there. Don't bring him home. If Egbert Hembry wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was there. I'd went into the program. Everything was good. I'd went through and started finally telling the truth again. The drugs were out of my system for a little bit. So the preacher started asking, if you're saved, raise your hand. And Randy wouldn't raise his hand. And he said, why don't you just get saved? And I said, I think I'll wait till I get home to get saved. Because, see, Randy used getting saved to try to get out of homework the first time. So Randy was going to use getting saved to get my mom and dad on my side again this time. There was always another scheme.
Yeah.
Sober, away from home, but still scheming. Mm-hmm. That was my life. As soon as I woke up, I was trying to figure out how to get something over on somebody.
Right, yeah.
That was my life. But God has different plans. So November 11th, 2012 at 7:17, waiting what I thought until I got home to be saved, trying to leave the place, calling home, begging my mom and my dad. November 11th, 2012 at 7:17, the preacher was preaching out of Ephesians 2, and that's where the whole "but God" comes from. Mm. And I'll read that.
Yeah, I want everybody to see this. This is a cool thing. Tell us a story about this, Randy.
This Bible right here was the Bible. Oddly enough, you know, a lot of people think you should give up on somebody after a little while. But see, my testimony is right here in this Bible, right here in the front of this Bible. It says, things are not always easy, but I want you to always remember that God is always there for you. You just need to make the first step back. Romans 8:28-33 says, that all things work for good to them that are His. And Randy Berger, God loves you. Teresa Braden gave me this Bible in 2009. It was never opened until 2012. God saved me, and I've marked this Bible up. It's got preachers from all over that have signed this Bible that Randy goes through, and I'm one of the ones that mark this Bible. And this is the very Bible I was holding in my hands when God saved me. And after I'd got back and I got home, I'd put it in the Bible cover that Fidget has over there that my family had went together and got for me for Christmas. So it's a $300 leather Bible cover.
Wow.
That's an expensive Bible cover.
Yeah, buddy.
But my family said, we know what you are about. And we know what you like. And they wanted to protect my Bible. But it actually separated my Bible. And it tore it apart to where I had to go get it fixed. And the man told me, he said, it's too expensive to repair unless it's a family heirloom. And I told him it was. That this Bible was special to me. And the guy that fixed the books, he fixes a lot of books, but he says Bibles go to the front. And then once he heard my story and he heard my testimony, he went to fixing my Bible. And he called me one day and he said, hey, I was just thinking about this Bible and your testimony. You see, every chance you talk to somebody is another excuse for me to share my story. And I got to telling him about "But God" in Ephesians 2. And he said, I was thinking instead of maybe putting the Holy Bible on the front, maybe you'd like to have "But God" on the front. And some people might think that's bad, but that's okay for me. Mm-hmm. Because every time I see this, that reminds me of who I was.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And when I remember who I was, it reminds me of how great God is.
Amen.
And so this Bible went and got fixed, and it was expensive, but that was my next year's Christmas gift, was to pay and to fix this Bible. So now everywhere that I go, the Bible that was bought for me in 2009, never cracked open until 2012, and through them have numerous preachers and pastors from all over, scriptures, and my life is right here in this thing. It's the most valuable thing I own for me. And that's why it's special to me. But out of Ephesians 2, it says, and you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sin, wherein in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince, the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all, not just the drug addict, not just the loser, not just the trash, among whom also we all had our conversation in times past, in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. And I remember sitting in that pew and thinking, man, I'm not here because I'm a drug addict. I'm not in this situation because I've done a lot of bad things. I'm here because I was born this way. Mm. I was born a sinner, just like everybody else. I'm not an outcast. This right here lumped everybody in the same category for me, and I hadn't been in a category with the normal people in a long time. But this told me we were all the same way.
Yeah.
So that started connecting me back to something. And verse 4 says, but God, who is rich in mercy. For his great love, wherewith he loved us. Just because we're doing right is not what verse 5 says. It says, even when we were dead in sin, has quickened us together with Christ. By grace you're saved. And that's what was so special to me. The preacher said in Texas, he said, you look like a freight train, Randy. He said, you look like you was mad. And I said, I was mad. Everything I'd lied and told myself for 12 years. I realized at that moment was a lie. That God was real. And God wanted to help me. And God was there for me. And I kept running. And I thought, man, if I would have just submitted a long time ago, would that have saved my family a lot of heartache? And I was mad, but it didn't stop me. Because I got up and I made that step, and I think God saved me before I even got to where that altar was. Because in the men's home that I was in, the men sat on this side and the women were on this side. So don't ask me why, but I ended up on the side that the women are supposed to go to. And I never got in trouble. I'm glad the pastor didn't get on to me. But he come down and prayed with me, and he said, Randy, you've been raised in church your whole life. I know you know what to do. And I said, preacher, I don't. Just because they're raised there and sing there, somebody's got to take the time out to explain this stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I'd sat in the pew. I'd been to the events. But nobody had sat me down and explained to me what was happening to me right then. Honestly, I thought after I got saved, I'd never make another mistake. I thought life was good from then on. Truth.
Yeah,
and I might have made it 2 days.
Yeah.
And that's probably because I didn't talk to many people. I'm sure I did mistakes and just didn't realize it. But 2 days later, I remember, you know, a thought had hit my head, and I went and talked to the pastor, and he set me down. And that's when, that's why I think that program was so vital for me, is because I was living with people who could disciple me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we call it a rehab, but it's actually a Christian character building program. We're getting devotion, we're getting Bible, and you live with the pastor, you live with the deacons, you live with men of like faith in the same area, so you get to work that stuff out. We started memorizing scripture, and man, that stuff still stuck in my head. And I was being taught, you know, I spent 12 years not knowing anything about it, but listen, I was put through the advanced program real quick, and what I found out is I liked that.
Yeah.
I liked knowing more about this and about him and about how a man could love me even more than my daddy loved me, which I thought, I still call my dad the greatest man in the world because he's a great example for me. But that's why today I know that that's not the norm for all the people that I deal with. Yeah. I had a man message me not too long back, and he said, Randy, do you think, have you ever thought about where you would be if you didn't have the support system like you've got? I've been blessed. I've got a lot of family that supports me now, and that encourages me now. I said, I have thought of that. And that's why we're trying to create that here for everybody. Because I believe God can do that. Now, he don't do it in Randy's time. Now, if he'd have done it in Randy's time, it would already been done. It would already run its time and shut down. Randy likes to go a little hard at stuff. And God's way is perfect, not Randy's. And God's been laying some foundation and some leg work and stuff. Since I've been back, we've got these rubber bracelets that we give out everywhere. I mean, we're well over
30. You can see these everywhere.
Well over 30,000 of them things. Yep. And, you know, we give out lanyards. We give out T-shirts. Anything that we can do to get that conversation started.
Oddly enough, we looked at some of the statistics for our podcast. We actually get listeners from all over the U.S. and even some foreign countries. So tell us about, for the folks who aren't from here who haven't seen them yet, tell us about these But God signs that are going up everywhere.
That's one of those things people ask me how it started, and I say, I have no idea, man. Because God can do that stuff. You can be right there. You can be the hands and not even know what he's doing. So we were doing the 4th of July parade, and my big thing is I want to get the community together. I want to get the churches together, not so they'll all be exactly the same. But so they can sit in a room with each other. Right,
and that's what we talked about in our last episode with Pastor Kevin Terry was that, you know, hey, we need this diversity among churches, but not division.
Sure.
You know, be different, but work together.
That's it. It's pretty simple, right?
Oh, yeah. It should be.
I'm not a smart man, but it sounds simple to me.
It sounds pretty simple to us.
So, you know, we wanted to get the community together, and, you know, we'd done been, you know, God had done been doing the groundwork with the bracelets, with the shirts and stuff like that. So we went on where everybody gets their news today. We went on Facebook.
There you go.
And we said, hey, listen, if we can get – I know hopefully you can see this big, beautiful beard, but it was longer than
this. If you're just listening, right. it's a good beard.
It's the best there is, okay? So it's a beautiful, beautiful beard. And I said, if we can get 300 people to show up and walk together in between.
Now, I remember this.
In the same area. If they'll walk together, then I'll let them shave my beard.
And I want to mention here really quick, this is a big deal, okay? If you're not a beard person, listen.
I'm the only person in the room right now who's not.
Pride and joy. I actually meant to tell Randy this.
I probably would be if I could. It just doesn't
I meant to tell Randy as soon as he walked in, but that I understand his pain now because last night we were getting ready for bed, and I kissed my wife, and she stopped, and she looked back at me. She said, I think it's about time you cut that beard off.
Oh, she didn't.
Oh,
that hurts me, and I don't have a beard.
What? I thought you liked the beard. She said, I do, but I just don't like kissing on it.
See, I don't have a beard, but I have a long
hair. I meant to tell you, I'm in trouble, Randy, because it looks like I'm going to have to cut off some of my pride and glory.
Man, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
But you know about that too well.
Hey, it's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of effort put in it, and, you know, it kind of becomes a part of you. You know, it's a good conversation piece for me when I'm talking to a lot of people. But
there you go.
Anything to start a conversation. Right. You know, a lot of people think I ride Harleys, you know, for the way I look, and I'm like, I've never rode a bike in my life, you know. But with the parade, you know, we said we were going to get these people, and my bosses started coming together. They let us buy some banners, and we were buying just banners that just said Buck God.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was going to, of course, pull one of the trailers. And his trailer has a big gate on the back. Mm. And he said, Randy, that's too big just for Buck God. He said, I want to fill that whole gate up.
Mm.
And he said, what do you want to put on it? And we were just sitting there in his living room talking. And I remember him telling me, we all have problems. Yours just gets put in the paper. And I said, Dad, everybody's got a problem that no one can fix but God.
Mm.
No matter what it looks like. Mm-hmm. I've still got problems. But he's just going to be the one that has to fix it.
Yeah.
And that's it. So we called the lady at KC Graphics and told her what I wanted done. And after she printed it out, she called me up one day and she had told me the price of the banner. And she said, Randy, we can't charge you for that. And I said, why? Because we've spent a lot of money, but it was worth it, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, yeah.
And she said, we just can't charge you for that. She said, here's what I want to do. I want to print that banner for you. You can just pull it around in the parade. Then when you get done, my dad's got some property right up next to the highway. And what I'd like to do is for you to put that sign up there. And then after a few months, you can take it and move it to other places in the community. And I said, sure. I'd love that. Because I ain't got to pay for the banner. Still get to use the banner.
Oh, yeah.
We still get to put it up. It was a win-win. And that's how I know a lot of times God's way. Because everybody wins. Right? She wanted to help. She wanted the whole community to come.
Looking back now, you definitely know it was God's way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense, no other way. So after the parade, you know, we have 300 people show up. They shave my beard off, and you know, they're coming around, and they're Randy, we want you to be the grand marshal, and I said, you know, you need to be at the front of the parade, and I said, I will not, because I don't want. Everybody thinks with as loud as I am that I want the attention, but I don't. I just want everybody to help. That's all I want. And in order to do that, you got to be really loud. And so I've been really loud.
Yeah.
But when it come to that parade, I said, I want my dad up front.
Hmm.
I've been an embarrassment to my dad. And my dad likes to wave at people and make sure people see him. And I said, this is a time I want my dad to have something. I can't afford to give him money. But that was a day for my dad. So my dad pulled around, and we had 340 people show up, and they let my 4-year-old daughter start off by shaving my beard.
Did you cry?
I thought I looked so silly, man. And so then after that, we put that sign up, and thinking that we would just move it around every few months, one sign. And it was probably a couple months, and a guy by the name of Jeremy West called me, and he said, "Randy, I was wondering about how to sponsor one of them banners."
Oh.
And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, them signs you're putting up." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "How much does it cost for one of them 'everybody has a problem, no one can fix but God' signs?" I said, "Well, they're $100. He said, "I want to buy one." I said, "What are you going to do with it?" He said, "Put it somewhere." And that's what we did.
All right. And then from then,
we've got up over 70 banners.
Wow. Right now. And the cool thing about that is these banners, not only me and Carrie was talking about it. We was driving to Knoxville one day, and you go every couple of miles, like we'd like to play a game with them. You know, like, "Oh, there's one of Randy's banners."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
"Oh, there's another." And we'll see like who can spot the most banners, because like there's that many of them. Yeah. And the cool thing is like you see them all the way going to like all the way to you get the interstate going to Knoxville. And you've even stated that you have some up in Knoxville, in North Carolina, I think is what you said. I mean, they're like
Knoxville, North Carolina, Illinois now.
I mean, they're getting all over the place.
They're everywhere.
You've had an opportunity to really travel.
Oh, yeah.
And go to a lot of places and really share your testimony, right?
Sure. And that's why, you know, and people say, "Randy, what you do is so great." And I think it shouldn't be. I mean, really what I do is what we're all called to do.
Ooh, amen. That hurts.
It's that easy.
Yeah, right? Buddy.
I'm not special. People say you've got a powerful testimony, but I want people to know I think a powerful testimony is the kid that didn't give in to temptation.
Absolutely, like yeah.
The kid that lived for God and didn't give in to the culture and everything like I did and didn't make all the mistakes. Now that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I like to tell a lot of people. I mean, I talk about them a lot on the podcast, that I got a little bit of group of guys that I, you know, that we try to encourage each other and we stay in touch. You know, there's 25, 26 of us in that group, so it's a pretty big group. But one of the things that I always tell them is like, God has given you a story to share. Mm-hmm. Okay, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if you're a fall-away Christian, if you're backslidden, if it doesn't matter if you've had an addiction problem. It doesn't matter what your story is. God has given you a story. And it can be used to tell and preach to anybody,
Mm-hmm.
He has given you a specific story, and you can use that story, no matter what it is, it could be you're the most perfect child that you've ever seen, you know, and it can still be a great story.
It's just like your signs say, everybody has a problem that only God can fix.
That's it. It's that simple.
And, I mean, everybody's got a problem that, in some way or form or fashion, everybody can resonate with. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily even talking about addiction, but specifically talking about addiction, especially if you're not listening to this and you're not from around here, addiction is, do you know the percentages of off the top of your head of some of the addiction rate in Scott County? I mean, they're like off the roof.
Yeah, I don't know right off.
I don't know. I mean, it's like,
I don't know either. It's high though.
It is like crazy high.
But you know, so we're in East Tennessee. It. You know, especially people who aren't from around here that happen to hear this. We're from East Tennessee. We're in, you know, Appalachia, rural Appalachia, and the amount of addiction that it's just been rampant. You know, especially prescription pain pills and things in our area. I mean, there's major pharmaceutical lawsuits. In the works over these things.
I've got a statistic. I went in every county school, middle, high school, and every time I get the kids together, and I have them raise their hand if they know somebody who suffers with addiction. And without fail, every time,
every
kid raises their hand. That they know somebody. So they're directly affected.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By addiction.
And that's what makes it so important. That's one of the reasons why we thought it was so important that we wanted to have you on, because, you know, majority of our listeners are from Scott County, and addiction either is in a family member, it's either you yourself, it's your mom or your dad, it's a close family member, a cousin, it's somebody that you know that affects you personally. I mean, I could almost guarantee you, like you'd said, every single person is affected by it in some way, form, or fashion. There's addiction in my family, there's addiction in my wife's family, there's addiction in your family, I mean, and obviously your story. I mean, it's just, it runs
my brother-in-law.
Rampant. It's all over the place.
Think of everybody.
Yeah, and so it's like either direct contact family or, you know, further relatives. There is in some way it affects you somehow. And so that's why it makes your story so perfect to tell and lead people to Jesus mm-hmm. with it is because
well, and that's the thing is like we all can relate, and it was kind of one of those things. I mentioned our brother-in-law, you know, Randy. He's had family members that have had you know, suffered with addiction and stuff, and just being able to talk to other people who have dealt with it, being able to talk to other people who have had family members or close friends or whatever deal with that. I know for me, like I've had family members, and we never really talked about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was kind of like what you were telling with your story. I mean, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't get brought up. Nobody really addressed things or whatever. And so it's really liberating to kind of talk about it. And so one thing I did want to ask you while we've got you here, Randy, though, is moving forward, what can we as individuals, but even more so maybe even as churches, what can we do to make a bigger dent in this? What can we do to make ourselves personally and then, like I said, as a church, more hopeful, more inviting to people who are struggling with addiction so that they would, you know, hopefully, like you said, you perceived that judgment, even if it wasn't necessarily there for sure. But sure. What can we do to reach out to them?
I think you just said it. Reach out. Right? So we go out and we let everybody know that we haven't always been perfect. Some people think they are. Mm. We haven't always been this way.
Yeah.
And that's really a good part to start with, is doing what we're all called to do, is to share that story. And when you have somebody, listen, it's not saying every time they call and ask for money, give them money. I actually highly advise not to right. do that, right?
Right.
But here's the main thing. Open the door.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple. Mm-hmm. Open the door. When they do show up, if they do show up, we go out, we invite. We know that goes so far, right? But most of the time, your testimony is they're going to watch it when you don't know they are, mm-hmm. like when you're at the gas station, when you're at the restaurant. I seen a waitress the other day said the most hateful crowd is the after Sunday church crowd that comes through the restaurant. And I think there is no way that should be true.
Yeah.
Right. There's and we no like way. To think, oh, that's not us here where we live. That's not our church crowds. Yeah. But then you talk to them.
So
and
I
they're
think
like,
if we realize people are always watching, right? Yeah. And that there's always something we can do. There's a lot of churches that say, Randy, what can we do? And I think that's one of the things. If we come together. And we sit and we have that talk, which is, I think, is I have this dream about a place called the front porch, because I think that's what's wrong with us, is nobody sits on that front porch and has that talk anymore.
Yeah.
You know, family used to sit out there. I mean, we're real country, so they used to sit on the porch and break beans all day. I hated breaking beans, man.
Yeah.
You're talking about
I remember doing that with my grandparents. Yeah, man,
I hated that stuff. But while you're sitting there doing that, you're talking.
Yep.
And you're building that – everybody's scared to talk now if you don't agree 100%.
Or if you're sitting there doing nothing, you got to have the fly swatter at least doing something.
Or the phone.
Hitting flies.
We think we're so connected with this phone, and we're not. We're so disconnected, it's not funny.
Yeah.
We're so disconnected to where if you've got a spare minute, rather than, and if you're in a doctor's office and you've got a couple minutes, instead of making a conversation,
you don't look at people. You don't make eye contact anymore.
Yeah, you're going to get down in that phone.
Yeah.
So you're stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's why we think the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. It's connection.
Mm. That's good.
They did a study. It was called Rat Park Study, right? It was way back when. And they put these rats in a cage, and one bottle had just water. And the other one had water mixed with cocaine or heroin. And without fail, 100% of the time, the rats went to the heroin and the cocaine, overdosed, and died, right?
Right.
But later on, a guy did another study, and he said, look, they have nothing else to do. So what if we make it like a rat park and put like different color balls in there for them and have like more rats to hang out with?
Yeah.
And no rat overdosed.
Wow.
Really?
No
really?
Rat went to the, I mean, the video, man. You'll find it when you Google it. And they got, you know, are we just like rats? No, we're not. But there's something there.
Right. Right?
And we think if people can believe that they can be connected to the church, well, then they might just be connected to the church. And once they find that connection, I think there's something to them feeling like somebody again.
Oh, yeah.
And once,
oh, yeah.
I know when I was in Texas, they set a desk up. And we didn't have internet. It wasn't allowed to have cell phones. Like, this is that type of place, right? So, but they set a computer up for me. And I tell everybody, I don't even know if it was plugged in. Because there was nothing to do, you know? Yeah. But they wanted me to look legit while I was helping them in.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Wow.
I felt like somebody.
Wow. Yeah.
I felt like I was providing the service that people needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exactly what my boss does now. You know, Trent tells me, he said, Randy, you're the professional. I don't know what you need to do. Tell me what you need to do. And I'll make it happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you feel like somebody, you might just be somebody.
Well, that's what I think is cool, is because you talk about, you know, being connected, and you use that word connection and being connected over and over and over again right there. And I think that that's really why I love talking to you and using your story so much, is because, you know, like last week we talked to Kevin kind of about this, but, you know, everybody's got a problem, and addiction touches everybody. It doesn't matter if you go to a church of God, if you go to a Baptist church, if you go to a Catholic church, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if you don't go to church. Huh? Addiction still touches you.
Sure.
And everybody's got a problem. Mm-hmm. It don't matter if I go to, you know, if I'm a Baptist and you're a Catholic, it doesn't matter if we got different views on things. It doesn't matter if, you know, I like my church seats purple and you like them red.
Yeah.
We got a problem and I got a problem, but there's only one person that can fix that problem.
That's right.
God. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's why I love your story so much, is because you go to these different churches and you talk to them. You've talked at, you know, probably by this point, probably hundreds. You've talked to, you know, different church after different church, and you move church to church to church. And even in our own county, you have probably talked to almost, if not every church in Scott County in some way, form, or fashion, and did some sort of, you know, talk event with them and told your story, whatever the case may be. But you've went church to church to church to church, because it doesn't matter what, you know, their differences are, or what, you know, they may have opinions on this that you don't agree with, because it doesn't matter. They may listen to a music that you think's okay or not okay, or whatever the case may be. It doesn't matter, because they got a problem.
That's right.
And you know a guy that can fix it, and you want to tell them about it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's why I think it's so perfect, and that's why, you know, it's all God's timing, you know, because we see that just all the time. And I think that that's even God's time with this podcast, is scheduling you in right after Kevin Terry, because that was just by default.
Oh, man, we tried to have you, back in November.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago.
2 months ago, yeah.
We had tried
and just schedules didn't work.
Yeah, and you had backed out, and then we ended up having to back out on some, and it's just not worked out. But here you are, and we have this scheduled in, and it just happens to be right after our podcast with Kevin Terry, and we talked about this connectivity through churches, and it's like, that's exactly what you've been doing, because it's not about the preference. It's about the gospel. It's about the story of God. It's about what God can do in your life.
Sure.
And so that's what you brought to these churches, and that's what you have been, you know, you've connected these churches in ways. And so I think that that's what it's all about, and I think that that's, you know, if anything, if we could help as individuals or as churches, is we have to have unity. We could bring it back to the same thing that we brought it back to last podcast with Kevin, is we got to be connected. We got to have unity, okay, in order to reach the lost, in order to reach the addicted, in order to reach the oppressed, in order to, you know, reach the sin and the lost world. There's a dying and broken world out there. And if the church is too busy fighting itself, then we can't, you know, visit the world that needs to be saved.
But how are we going to provide that connection that they need if we can't be connected?
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we have to have some sort of foundation there.
We saw a small glimmer of that with the parade. There was 340 people there.
Yeah,
there was
buddy. Yeah.
A lot of different churches
that
walked together. They even had the same shirt on.
Yeah.
And we had people that don't belong to a church that was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they all was there for the same purpose, right? To come together, to figure out, hey, listen, even if you put everything else aside, let's try to keep some people alive. And then since then, a lot of people don't understand this, but I've never asked anybody to come speak. And I don't know that I'll ever have to. Sorry, I'm coughing.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But God's opened up all those doors for me.
Absolutely.
I went and spoke in factories. People say, why would you do that? Because somebody asked me to come. I'll always go.
And there's people there that need Jesus.
Because at that altar, when I didn't know what I was saying, I said, God, whatever you need me to do. And the weird part was, is I meant that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever he needs me to do. Whether it means going against. And does that
not give your life a greater purpose? Your meaning?
Sure. And it's also opened my eyes to some things. You know, there's some things I used to be dead set against it. I think, okay, maybe that's not that important.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just took what everybody said and I never read it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to read for myself. And that's where we come from, drinking the milk and getting in some meat for ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm of age now. I've been in enough churches, been in enough services. I like singing, but I love preaching. And I've heard a lot of preaching, more than a lot of people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sat in a lot of different churches, heard a lot of different style preachers, mm-hmm. even in the same name, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they all are the same, not even just Baptist, but the same type
right,
of Baptist.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah.
The preachers preach different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've noticed is God calls us to be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm different. Mm-hmm. If you're around me long enough, you'll guarantee go with me on that.
Randy's a little
but I
different.
Think God does that so we can be ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have to fake it till I make
right.
it.
Yeah.
I don't have to pretend to be nobody else. If I want to grow a beard out, God says, that's okay, Randy. Grow it out. Right? If I want to laugh and cut up, right?
Yeah.
Here's what I've noticed. There's people I might be able to reach that you can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's yes. people you can reach that I can't.
Yeah.
So that's why I say together we can make yeah. a difference.
Absolutely.
Now, if we've just got one person out here, you know, it might not make that big of an impact. But if you have 300 of those people,
mm-hmm.
that might make a bigger impact.
Mm.
But if you have 3,000 of those people,
mm-hmm.
I'll shave my beard off again.
You guys heard it here. 3,000.
3,000 people. How easy would that be?
That it should be.
22,000 people in Scott County.
Mm-hmm.
70%, I believe Brother Kevin says, is unchurched.
And I would, I'd be inclined to believe that statistic, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. we say you have to go into all the world and spread mm-hmm. the gospel. And everybody says, Randy, they've never heard the gospel. And I say, I see them every day. Well, Randy, yeah. we need to go out. You've got these kids hungry. I say, I see them every day.
Mm.
You ain't got to go everywhere else now. Listen, it's made its way back around.
Mm. It sure has.
Nobody take care of everybody else. That's the country thing to do. If I needed some sugar, I walk to your house and borrow
oh,
some
yeah,
sugar.
Oh, yeah, you're going
to
get some
now,
sugar.
If I walk to your house, I best call first,
yeah.
you know, to let you know I'm coming.
yes.
And I best not bring nobody with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if I'm not there when I told you I was going to be there, you're not getting in. That's who we are today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
Defensive. But used to, you didn't have to make no appointment. You just stopped by. And if you wanted to hang out and talk for a little while, well, that was okay, too. And I think that's where the problem is at. We're so busy being against each other that we can't come together.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not saying you have to agree 100%. I'm
no,
not even
no,
saying you have to
no.
agree on the big things.
No.
But listen, some of these smaller things.
It's like we said earlier, we don't even agree with ourselves.
I don't agree with myself most of the time. I'm probably going to watch this later and think, what was you saying, Randy? But I think, you know, God has allowed me to do that and to see some things and experience some things. And I think he's got a reason for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
We were having some conversation today about some things that I hope happens, right? But I do know this. Every time the conversation comes up, I always say this. Can we get the churches involved?
Yeah.
Can we get the churches
yep.
involved?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to leave the church out.
No, no.
I know that connection was what I was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And now I love my church. Just mm-hmm. this past Christmas, I got to be a help to my pastor. And there is no better feeling than a man that's preached 30 years that you thought, listen, he don't want nothing. I'm probably the worst person he's got in his congregation, right? He never probably wants anything. That's the way my mind works. Nobody else's might do that, but that's the way I think. But now when we have revivals, he'll have, you know, people open up, and it's not just the doctors. It's not just the lawyers. And you got little Randy. He gets to stand up and feel like he's a help to his church.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm out and I see my church, and my church encourages me, and my church says, let's keep going. We want to be a help to you. And then I see these other churches, and I want everybody to see what I see.
Yeah,
I think it can be done. I think it's working. But the people aren't around like I am, and they don't get to see that it's happening. And after you try something like that for so long, you just get tired.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just give up, but I can't. I don't want to.
Right.
Man, I just think of how many lives. I would love for my daughter not have to worry about this.
Yeah.
We ain't got much time. She's fixing to be 5 years old. We better get a ball rolling.
Yeah.
And try to help as many people as we can so maybe she don't have that story to tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe when the day comes that somebody does offer, she knows she can call her pastor. She can call the people at her church that she's loving on, the youth groups, you know, and there's somewhere she can go. And I want her to know she can come to her dad, but we know there's probably other places that she'll try first.
Yeah.
And that's another thing where I think together, right?
Yeah.
I tell people we might not be able to change the world, but we can change the world for one person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And through that, I can't tell you how many people we've been able to connect to go into treatment. And God's placed me where he's placed me, I think, to kind of funnel people into faith-based treatment. Happen to be a big fan of it because mm-hmm. that's where God changed my life at. It's not something I think people have to do. A lot of people don't like when I say that either. But I found people find God in the weirdest places.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In some of the darkest places.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've watched people get in the middle of the highway waiting for the next car to run them over and say, God, if you're real, help me now. Well, he's still sober today. He's still going to church today.
Man,
I know another guy that was a big-time football player, breaking records. That's my buddy Wesley. Records don't mean nothing to him no more. He's a deacon at Emmanuel Baptist Church, though. And I think that's cool that he can be a deacon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even with the background that he had? Sure.
Yeah, buddy.
Because so did Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul had a bad background.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's where I connect a lot with Paul,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like him. I know that Robert Gibson, you know, he thinks he's the worst. When you hear people like me come around, we all think we're the worst of the worst, man. You know, no matter what they've done, everybody thinks they're the worst. But that helps me to stay grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation today, and, you know, some people think different. But I said, I'd like to have all the pastors in Scott County come together, and I'd love to wash every one of them's feet. And people say, what's that about? But I just want to tell them thank you
mm-hmm.
for keeping a door open, for trying. It's hard, especially right now for pastors and for church members and for deacons. But I want a way that we can give back to them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think if we give to them and they give to us together, we'll grow stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll watch our churches grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if our churches grow, then we can reach more people.
Yeah.
And before long, we've made an impact.
Mm-hmm. And that's really, I guess you could say, our biggest goal with the podcast is obviously we want this podcast to stretch as far as wide and as it possibly can and share the gospel to anybody that's willing to hear mm-hmm. it. But a big goal for us is that we want somehow, in some way, we don't know how, you know, but we have faith that we saw the call to action, and me and Chuck jumped on it, and that's what we're doing. And we don't know how God's going to do it, but we really believe that through this podcast, God is going to use that to be a string to connect churches in Scott County. Mm-hmm. And that's what we hope. And so that's what we want. And that's why we've been bringing in you and Kevin and Pastor James. We're going to be bringing in other people and just trying to somehow funnel a connectivity through these churches in Scott County.
To have conversations with people that really about how real faith meets real life and using that to, like you said, connect people.
I like that you say that. You see my face lights up because in Texas we had a guy that come through and he said the same thing after he was in the program for a while. He said, it's real people mm-hmm. with real problems who found a real God.
Wow.
And I thought, man, and that's it's the same thing.
Yeah.
That's why when you said that, I thought, okay, God, I see you. Okay,
we've
something.
Been saying that a lot lately. Yeah, I feel like,
and that have, I don't know, I wouldn't just make that up.
No, yeah,
I can tell you the guy's name.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, real people with real problems have found a real God, and that's the same thing.
Yeah, it is, and that's what's funny.
We may have to title this episode that. I don't know.
Hey, actually, that is a good title. So you've heard it here first. But anyhow, Randy, listen, thank you so much for coming and sharing your testimony and how God has worked in you. I know that this episode will definitely tug on a lot of heartstrings. I know it has mine, and it is definitely giving me a lot to think about.
Yeah.
And I hope that if you're listening, that
I didn't cry just because we're on camera, though.
we had to act like men and suck it back.
But Randy got me over here. I was having to fight him back.
Yeah, there was a couple times there when I actually was like getting behind the mic a little bit.
Yeah.
But seriously, Randy, thank you so much, man. We'll need to have you back on again. I love having you on. I love talking to you. I mean, you're always fun to talk to. You have good energy, and it's awesome. But guys, thank you for tuning in and listening. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to be following along with us. If you guys see us on iTunes, make sure that you guys hit that subscribe button and that like button. If you can, it only takes 2 seconds to give us a rating. If you want to give 1 star, man, that's fine. But try to give us a rating, just because, you know, the algorithms mm-hmm. are crazy. And
you can find us both actually on our personal Facebook pages.
Yeah,
too.
If you got questions, you can message us. If you got topics, if you got anything that you guys
give
want
us
to
ideas,
talk about,
yeah, connect with us.
Message
this.
Us. Our email is crosswalk.faith@gmail.com. If you have any questions. questions or topics and things that you guys want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But thank you guys for joining in. And until next time, this is Crosswalk. Thanks.